Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Well, I'm joined now in the studio by the Minister for Finance and Fine Gael TD for Dublin Central, Pascal Donoghue. You're very welcome.
Good morning, Claire.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Let's start with this controversy. It was the top story in the news there again around the Strategic Housing Activation Office and the person who might head it up. Is it not risible that Fine Gael ministers are claiming this week that they'd no idea about this appointment or the preferred candidate? Because Brendan McDonagh's name has been in the papers for about 4 weeks now.
So the foundation of this office is a very good idea that I want to see happen. We have seen over 130,000 new homes built in our country between 2020 and 2024. But I and the government know we need to do better. And the creation of this office is one of the ways in which that can be done. And what will now happen, conscious of the public discussion on it, is the government will make a decision on this matter, but focusing on what is the office and what then is the process for leading to the appointment of the person.
And did you know that Brendan McDonagh was the preferred candidate?
Well, I don't know at the moment yet that he is the preferred candidate. A decision has to be made by
government. Well, he is. The housing minister has said very clearly he is.
And Minister Brown is doing an excellent job at the moment.
Is he? Why does he need a helper then?
Oh, because what James has recognised, and he is right, is two things. Firstly, while we had been making progress, we need to accelerate that progress now. And secondly, what he has recognised that I agree with him on is that one of the ways in which we can accelerate that progress is better integrating the work that is happening across government and in particular on the ground for major projects, looking at what are the blockages for them, particularly when it comes to the provision of infrastructure.
Miriam Nord says the government's Mr. Muscle.
Well, I think descriptions like that, I can well understand why somebody as excellent as Miriam Lord would write them. But really what I'm more concerned about is how we can ensure that projects that are ready to go or can be delivered soon, that we can make that happen. And that is why the government and Minister Brown are right to prioritise an idea like this and the foundation of such an office.
But you can't put somebody in there on 430,000. That's just toxic.
But again, the government will have to make a decision in relation to the creation of the office, which we are discussing today. And then after that, who will be the person to do it?
What's your view?
That I, of course, am mindful of the public concern about this. But I'm equally mindful of the public need for us to build far more homes than we are due to at the moment. And I believe the creation of this office is an important ingredient in doing that. And we will get that right. Mm-hmm. And the government and both parties in government are united in wanting to make that happen.
Yeah, but the trust is broken here a little bit between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael on this, with James Brown putting this name out there, Brendan McDonagh, and then all of this toxicity coming in around the salary. I mean, I would imagine you didn't need that.
There's an excellent working relationship between all the participants in this government. We are united, as I said, in believing that the creation of this office can make a big difference. We had an excellent discussion about this in Cabinet on Tuesday. And as is the case with all the important decisions that we have to make, we'll continue to work together to make what I believe will be the right decision and go back to where I began. 130,000 new homes have been built in our country over a 4-year period. But we know we need to build more. We know the progress that we are making did slow down. And we have to look at new ideas for accelerating that progress. And I believe this is a worthy one.
But you won't say whether Brendan McDonagh is the right man for the job.
And that is because the matter has to be discussed in Cabinet first.
Ultimately, though, will it be on Taoiseach's decision?
Well, the Taoiseach is head of government. But what the Taoiseach does in recognising that we have a multi-party government and two parties key to it, obviously, is he makes decisions on a consensual basis and agrees those decisions with the Taoiseach, just as happened in the last government. Mm-hmm. And he is as mindful of any of us of the need to build on the progress that we have made and the deep public need for that to happen.
Okay.
And in order to meet that idea and meet that need, Claire, I would suggest we do need to do new things. And one of those new things is looking at how an office like this can play a role.
The Sinn Féin leader said the salary is cracked. You know, if it's Brendan McDonagh and he remains on 430,000, that's just crazy. Do you agree with that?
Well, for me, it's more important that we make progress in delivering more homes. That's the key thing.
So the salary doesn't matter?
Oh, the salary is undoubtedly a matter government has to consider when you're making an appointment to any role. But it's all about a means to an end. Like, what is the end? We are so conscious that more homes need to be built. We're so conscious of all the change that is taking place around the world and around our economy. And in the midst of all that, we need to meet a key need of our society. And for me, not only am I willing to make the case for this office being part of how we do it, I'm willing to make the case for the person who's leading that office when the government makes the decision, which we're working on doing at
the moment. It sounds like you're not averse to Brendan McDonagh taking that role on 430,000.
I'm reluctant to be making the case for any candidate at the moment, mm-hmm. for the simple reason, as I've emphasised throughout our discussion on the matter, that the party leaders and the government yet have to make a decision on the matter. And conscious of the needs for these things to be done right and respect all individuals who are involved in it. I think it's important that that discussion conclude.
The opposition have suggested that Fianna Fáil went on a solo run on this one. That's not what you're saying here.
I am saying that when government ministers are making important decisions, they, and I have done this myself, make the case for what they believe is the right thing to do. The Minister for Housing, in the work that he is doing at the moment, is leading in our behalf in an excellent way in responding back to a really deep challenge that we have. And I support him in his efforts, and the government remains united in our need to do
that. Why isn't there a public competition to find this great unblocker that's needed?
Well, the government can make decisions in relation to appointments and to who we believe are the right people to make those decisions and to lead really important projects on our behalf.
But there might be people out there who believe that they have the expertise to do this job and have the expertise to do it, but aren't being given the chance to offer their services.
Indeed, I would respectfully just go back to the point I made to you earlier on, though, Claire, which is the decision has yet to be made. The government on Tuesday made a very important decision regarding the office, its terms of reference and the impact that I believe it can make and will make. We've built, as I said, 130,000 homes. We need to build more. We need to look at new ideas to allow us to do that. The government reached agreement on the construct of that on Tuesday. We'll now move on to a decision regarding who leads it soon.
Now, in the last couple of weeks, and it was only the start of April, it feels like much further ago, but when Donald Trump announced his tariffs, you at the time expressed grave concerns around what might happen in the medium term. You spoke about 80,000 jobs that might not be created if the very high level of tariffs were implemented. Has that moment of danger passed, in your view?
No. The moment has been deferred for now. And unfortunately, the trade uncertainty that we are now seeing is having an effect already on economic growth and is having an effect on sentiment regarding investment and how economies will grow in the future. Thankfully, our economy continues to perform well and the government has a very clear plan in place regarding how we respond back to this risk.
Mm-hmm. So we haven't had any measures outlined by the government to help the economy or help business.
The government has outlined three major projects to respond back to the level of uncertainty that is there. Firstly, the trade negotiations, which will be conducted on our behalf by the Commission of the European Union. The Taoiseach, Simon Harris, is in constant contact with him, convened a trade council that only met on Monday to discuss the impact of this uncertainty in our economy and the right policy response back. Secondly, Minister Jack Chambers is leading a review of the National Development Plan, which is all about how we invest more into our economy in the right way as things are changing. A classic example of how a government should respond back. And then thirdly, Minister Burke, week by week, is rolling out the different kind of measures to make our economy more competitive.
Mm-hmm. But no supports for businesses that might be affected by
this.
Well,
indeed, in a presentation that I have seen only recently by Enterprise Ireland, they have reminded me that company by company, they are engaging with employers and with firms and looking at how they can assist them. And it's important to make the argument to your listeners, if I may, that the level of and kind of intervention back from government to this difficulty is different to where we have been in the past, because it will be about helping companies diversify. It will be about helping them find new markets. And most importantly of all, when we're still in a period of negotiation, is influencing the common stance of the European Union on this issue, which we are actively doing. I was in the US myself only last week dealing with this and other matters.
Ursula von der Leyen hasn't met Donald Trump. There's nothing on the agenda. Does that concern you?
Of course, I'd love to see them meet because the president of our commission, President von der Leyen, does an exemplary job leading the commission and representing us. But what at the moment is critical is the trade commissioner, Commissioner Maro Šefčovič, is in regular contact with his counterpart. And that really is the key relationship. And that relationship is, to put it mildly, very busy at the moment with a lot of engagement happening.
And are we any clearer on what the United States wants from the EU in these negotiations?
Well, they've outlined generally what they want. You've heard that from President Trump on a regular basis and from other members of his administration. I should recognise that the Secretary of the Treasury, Secretary Besant, at the moment is making the case for stability and is recognising the importance of these trade negotiations to the success of the American and global economy. I think that's very welcome and that's very positive. Given that this is a negotiation, I am still of the view that it's best that it happen in a private way, that we allow the negotiation to continue and I hope conclude. And it's really up to the US at any point if they want to be more specific about what they want. The European Union has been really clear.
When you were there in the States, did you get much of that Lutnick line that we're his favourite tax scam? Is that around the place?
It has been raised with me at many other points
in
recent years. But I have to say, when I was over there last week, the engagement that I had was more about the importance of these negotiations, the importance of reaching a good outcome to them in the weeks ahead, and a recognition of what is at stake for the global economy, the European economy, and obviously in America.
These are people in the administration you're talking to.
Indeed. I've already indicated publicly I met one of the key economic advisors to President Trump. I visited him in his office. We had a very good discussion regarding the process.
Sensible and reasonable.
We are seeing from Secretary Besant a very clear recognition of the importance of stability and reaching an outcome to these negotiations. He has publicly emphasised that, while also emphasising, as he would, that he supports the work that is underway from President Trump on the future of global trade. Really, where the European Union needs to be, and certainly where Ireland is and the Commission is making the case for our competitiveness and for the value of Europe and Ireland by the certainty that we create being a good place to create and run a business in. If you set up a business in Ireland, if you set up a business in the European Union, if you're an international company wanting to know where you should put your capital, the key questions regarding how you will be taxed, what your trade policy will be, how legal issues will be resolved. The European Union has clear answers to all those questions as desired. Mm-hmm.
Now, the Microsoft president, Brad Smith, offered reassurance to the EU in general, saying that they are committed to this place and that they will not be forced back in their entirety back to the United States, and they'd push back very hard on that. Are you hearing that from the other multinationals? Because they are under a lot of pressure, aren't they, from the United States?
I am hearing from multinationals a very positive and broad recognition of their global business and of global supply chains. Whether you are running a data intensive or a technology intensive business, such as what Microsoft are running, or whether you're running a very technologically intensive business, but a different kind of business, for example, the life science sector, medicine sector, they all do recognise that if they want to meet the needs of the global economy, and they do, it makes sense to have your business located across the world. And that has helped them in the past and then indirectly helped the American economy.
But it's about their future investment. You know, if they're planning something new, they were going to build it in Ireland, do they now do that in the States?
And what I'd say about that, Claire, is that many times in the past when Ireland has been winning major investment into our own economy and Europe has been doing the same, those companies have also been invested in the American economy. Like, it's happened in parallel. And obviously, given the political focus on this issue within the US, companies are going to be carefully considering investment decisions that they will make. But it goes back to the exchange we just had a moment ago. The argument that I am making to them, and they are listening to, is that if they want to prosper and grow within the European Union, it is important, therefore, they have a presence within the European Union that is understood. And then if they want to be in the European Union and accept the first part of the argument, which they do, Ireland and the EU can offer such clarity regarding how we can tax you, what our trade policy will be, how we will support innovation. And that, I believe, matters to their long-term success. And that's the argument, company by company, the government is making. That's what Simon Harris is doing, it's Taoiseach, and it's the work that Peter Burke is doing. And it's also why the work that Jack Chambers is doing regarding investing in our future, that matters too.
Is this all changing the relationship between the EU and the UK? We know that there is a deal, a draft was released, it was published on Politico, but it's due to be signed this month. And it commits to free and open trade. What does that tell us?
So there are two catalysts externally regarding the relationship now between the UK and the European Union. The first one is the war in Ukraine, where we have been reminded yet again of how much we have in common with the United Kingdom and that their values in nearly all cases are our values, particularly when it comes to the rule of law. And secondly, then, it is the changed environment with regard to global trade. And then what has obviously happened internally within the United Kingdom is you have a government led by Prime Minister Starmer that is taking a more positive tone to the future relationship with the EU while making clear Brexit is a reality. So in terms of the summit that is coming up, there is a summit taking place now in a few weeks' time. It is the first summit of its kind since Brexit took place. And we are very much hoping what will come out of that is the UK and the European Union coming closer again and finding ways in which we can continue to trade with each other in a better way and have a deeper level of cooperation. Mm-hmm. I hope you'll understand, though, I'm not going to comment on a leaked document, particularly a leaked
Fair
diplomatic
enough.
Document.
But I suppose from Keir Starmer's point of view, he's got to be careful not to anger Donald Trump. And he's done a very good job of that up to now. And if he deepens relationships with the EU, he might put his future relationship with the United States at risk.
But we've seen so many examples over the last number of decades where countries have successfully deepened their trading and political relationships with more than one country at once. And I have no doubt at all that as the EU is moving forward its negotiations with the UK, we are mindful of what they may do with the US and engaging with them on it. Mm-hmm. And equally, you can be certain the UK are doing the same. So this is part of the background to the negotiations that are underway. But what is really positive and really welcome is we are hearing very clearly from Prime Minister Starmer and from Commissioner van der Leyen, and the Irish government has been making this case for some time, that what we can gain by coming closer together again.
OK, just a couple of brief things to finish on. The cost of living, I mean, driven again yesterday, increased figures driven by food prices escalating again, particularly when people are going to do their weekly shop. But you have decided that there will be no help this year when it comes to the cost of living. Certainly there won't be any energy supports. How can you make that decision when people are still paying very high prices for their day-to-day expenses?
Absolutely understand. And God knows, I can see it in my constituency and in my work across the country that the cost of living is still with us as a really big problem for so many. And it is, I know, having an effect on decisions that many of your listeners make every day. I do have to accompany that by saying that the rate of inflation within our economy, in other words, the speed with which prices are going up, is now far lower than it has been in recent years. And the very big supports that we made available when we had inflation of 5, 10, well in excess of 10%, I can't then make the case for doing when inflation is so much lower than it was a few years ago. And I just go back to the middle of the conversation we've just had there. You know, you have correctly been quizzing me and questioning me on the level of uncertainty and challenge that our economy could face overall. And I believe that is there. And therefore, it's important to prioritise decisions we make. And my number one job across the coming year is to focus on keeping jobs in Ireland. And by keeping our public finances safe, to relate that back to a reality, to help us to continue to invest in homes and grow our public services. And a consequence of that, making the case for that, is then saying that the many additional billions of euros that we spent in other measures in recent years, that it's not appropriate to repeat
that. Okay. And just finally, your view on RTE, the news around RTE's write-off of this IT project, in part at least, but at a cost of 3.6 million euro.
It's a further big disappointment on two different levels. Firstly, it should have been made clear at the point of time in which the issue occurred. Secondly, millions of euro for any of us are still huge amounts of money. And particularly when they're invested in projects that don't actually then happen in the way that was intended. It's important that Minister Patrick O'Donovan continues with his work to make sure he and his department and the public are aware of these issues. What's as important then is the reform agenda that is underway here in RTE, that be completed.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, the point in this is that you see this write-off at a time when RTE is seeking state funding for layoffs.
And we have made that state funding available in recognition of the fundamental importance of public broadcasting to the health of our society and to our democracy.
But I'm sure you would have appreciated knowing the full facts about something like this when you're giving money with one hand and you could argue it's going out with the other.
But this is why I go back to the point I made a second ago to you. For me, a key issue here is also in relation to the timing of disclosure. That matters like this, when issues like this happen, you're always better off when the facts are clear, making them available in a timely way, as opposed to happening later like this has happened. And that is why it is a further disappointment, but it's also right why Patrick O'Donovan is right to be doing this work to fully understand the scale of these issues.
All right, we need to leave it there. Thank you very much.
Thank
Minister
you very much,
Pascal Donoghue. Now, just some news coming into us in the last few minutes. NICAP is being investigated by counter-terrorism police following videos allegedly showing the band calling for the deaths of MPs and shouting "Up Hamas, Up Hezbollah." The rap trio has had several gigs cancelled, we know, after the footage appeared to show one of them shouting those slogans in November of last year. This and another video from a gig in London in 2024 has now been referred to Counter-Terrorism Internet Referral Unit for assessment by specialist officers. This confirmed by the Met Police in Scotland Yard today. We'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.